It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Andy, Alex, and Mr. Jason Snell are here with lots to talk about. We've got our new iPhones. We'll talk about the buying experience, the picking up experience, the installation experience, and some new features, plus some new bugs that need to be squashed. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 836, recorded Tuesday, September 20th, 2022. Travis, I'll take one of each. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by New Relic. Use the data platform made for the curious. Right now, you can get access to the whole New Relic platform and 100 gigabytes of data per month free forever. No credit card required. Sign up at newrelic.com/MacBreak. And by ZocDoc. With ZocDoc, you can find the right doctor for you in your network and in your neighborhood. Go to ZocDoc.com/MacBreak and download the ZocDoc app for free. Start your search for a top-rated doctor. Many are available within 24 hours. And by 8 Sleep. Good sleep is the ultimate game changer, and the pod is the ultimate sleep machine. Go to 8Sleep.com/MacBreak. to check out the pod and save $150 at checkout. 8 Sleep currently ships within the U.S., Canada, the U.K., and select countries in the EU and Australia. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest Apple news with Alex Lindsay from officehours.global. Hey, hello, Alex.
It's good to be here.
Good to see you. Also, Andy Anako, WGBH in Boston.
Hey there.
And Jason Snell from sixcolors.com.
Hello.
You have been, we have been, all of us, posting photos of the good old days. Here's me and Randall Schwartz in 2005 on a geek cruise, which you snapped, Jason.
Yeah, that's one of my, you're giving tips. You're doing Mac tips,
tips and tricks.
Yep.
How fun.
We go way back.
Yeah.
I was on, you know, we had a bunch of Macworld editors on some of those very first episodes of Mac Break Weekly.
That's where we met.
Mac Break, back in the day when it was video, right? Before it was after.
We met a call for help.
Yeah, it was after Tech TV. And yeah, that was all. Yeah, so we do go back a long way.
A long way.
Here we are again.
To 1999, most likely. Here we are in 2010.
Yeah.
At the iPad announcement, the last Apple event I ever went to. And then Alex put in some really fun images, which I won't show because we do have to do a show, but of old Twits. If you want to see those, they'll be on the Twit Plus feed for club members, because I'm sure they'll take that pre-show and edit it all up. I have in my hot little hands... Okay, now tell me if this is an Easter egg or not. So here's the this is the iPhone 14 Pro. Is that an iPod? is that an iPod box? Isn't that interesting?
The ultimate recycling.
That's adorable.
Do you think that's an Easter egg?
That is an Easter egg.
I think it has to be. The square thing is where the manual.
They designed backwards from
the
it.
Yeah, that little tiny manual.
The little tiny manual, and then I've already removed.
That no one reads. Everyone goes through it and looks for the sticker. Like, you just got to find the sticker.
Yeah, we got the stickers out. Yep. And then this is the you got one too, and you've already you left your cable in there because you probably don't need it.
I got cables, but yeah.
So yeah, does that look a little bit like? I mean, it could not. It could just be a coinkydink.
Hey. Those are nice cables, though. Like, we all have them, but they're braided. They're, like, really,
oh, the
really
new ones
nice
are braided?
Cables.
No, these are plastic. I hate to tell
These are not the braided cables.
These are not the braided cables you're looking for.
Not even on the Pro Max. I wish. No, the most impressive thing about the new iPhones is that the camera bump is so huge that they have to build it into the top of the case now and put it face first down.
It's massive.
It's not the camera bump. It's the camera ziggurat now. It's the Mayan temple.
On the other side, you have a dynamic island.
I think I made it work. Yeah. It's the camera mesa.
You got a dynamic island and a camera mesa. Mm-hmm. Wow. That's hefty. In fact, so much so that when I put it on an easel, the charging easel, it just kind of like tilts up, tilts forward.
Yeah,
it's pretty bad.
Remember, I mean,
it's its own stand.
This is why, like on the Pixel 6, you know, like that horizontal camera bar, it looked really weird, but then you appreciate that, well, now I can, it basically spreads the entire bump across the entire back, so it doesn't jiggle when you have it like face down or face up on the table. But remember the time when like all kinds of Apple people, like all the style wonks and design wonks, like, oh, look at that camera bump on that Nokia, Apple would never do something quite so vulgar as that.
Yeah.
It's a good solution. I'm glad they got over that.
If they made it 50% stick out more and then just made the whole thing a battery to even it out so it was flat, I'd be 100%
behind
that.
A telescoping lens. Just,
yeah, exactly. Brick. I mean, just have it stick out like a little James Bond thing. You know, I think I'd be there.
It is kind of an acknowledgement that these are really not phones anymore. They're cameras.
Yeah.
That's
really the big upgrade, right? The biggest upgrade on the phone every year is the camera.
We made a better camera.
Right? Yeah. The other stuff we're doing the best we can.
Yeah. Yeah. We're trying. So
it's an easy feature to explain, yeah.
Halide 2 just updated for the camera. Have you been taking any Alex, any raw images?
Yeah, they're big. In case you're wondering.
Yeah, more than 48 megabytes.
Yeah, they're massive. It's a lot of resolution. I mean, you really want to do it in a well-lit area. So well-lit, you're getting in a lot of data. When you get into a darker area, of course, you start to see if it gets too dark, of course, it just switches to night mode and you're going to get 12 megabits, right? So it drops down automatically if it's going to start needing more light. But I took some out of the back of my house and there's a lot of data there to work with. I mean, it's pretty impressive.
I am seeing on Reddit mostly photographers say that, in fact, because of the dynamic range of these DNGs, in fact, I've seen some images where they look dark if you expose for the highlights and they look dark, but you can pull it up because there's so much data in there. Mm-hmm. And I saw somebody say, you know, nobody has yet done the, in fact, it's almost impossible to do the dynamic range of these DNGs that they're shooting, but the Pro Raws. But they are, he says, when he goes directly in the Lightroom, appreciably more dynamic range than in his full-frame Sonys. Like, they're 11, they're test out at about 11 stops. He's saying we're getting closer to 15 stops on these.
I think the only thing I would say is that it's just a lot more grainy. Like, I definitely see the grain. You know, in it, it's, you know, taking that many pixels and putting it into that small of a space, the photo sites are going to have more errata, and that seems to be indicative of the pictures I've seen that I've taken so far.
Here's from Halide, the exposed for highlights. So this is on the left. This is what you would mm-hmm. see as a JPEG, and then if you take the raw out and you bring up the background, that's pretty
that
nice.
Detail's pretty amazing.
It doesn't look too that grainy.
I will say that the. Well, when you zoom all the way in, I mean, we're not zoomed in on there. But when you zoom all the way in, I felt when I zoomed up, I could see more grain in it just because of, and that's something that I would expect. But the dynamic range, it still means you could take a RAW at 48 megapixels, bring it up to wherever you want, and then take it down to the resolution that you're going to use it at, and all that grain will go away. It'll just be,
Yeah, I see in the sky, I see some grain, but you're right. If you collapse that.
I got to say the night mode, too. Pretty impressive.
Yeah, look how you see some stars there, and you know, that's kind of interesting. Yeah.
Well, even when it goes into the night mode, I took a picture of our cat, like when it was dark, and it was, you could tell because the cat's eyes, you know, their irises are all the way open. It was really dark, and it looked totally fine. Like nice. It was quite a thing. It's a good camera.
Good enough to say, oh, I'm going to trade in my 13 or 12 and get this 48 megapixel Pro RAW.
If you care about the camera.
Yeah.
I mean, if you care about the camera, that makes sense. I mean, it's just, it depends on how important the pictures are that you're taking with those cameras. You know, I think that I was excited to get the 14, have my wife switch up. I think she's got either an 8 or 10 and get her up to 13 because, you know, every time she took pictures of the kids, it was a bummer. Like, it was like, well, that's, you know, like, so the,
But is it the case only if you're willing to edit those Pro RAWs, or even without, even
no,
the JPEGs,
I think the 12 megs are fine. The 12s are significantly more detailed as well. I mean, they're definitely benefiting from a larger sensor that's being, because it's basically oversampling that 12 megapixel. So it is when it comes back down to that and using the binning, it definitely feels like there's a lot more detail there.
By the way,
yeah, it sounds very much like if you fancy yourself an iPhone photographer, you should probably upgrade to this model because it is that much more. If you're a casual photographer, I mean, you know, I don't think it necessarily motivates an update. When you get there, you will be very happy about it. I actually think for casual photographers, that 2x setting where it's cropping the 12 megapixels in the center of the frame is a more important feature than shooting RAW, because those people aren't going to be shooting RAW. But if you are somebody who actually thinks about shooting RAW, you use Halide, that update. You know, one of the clever things that Halide does that Apple won't do is it'll let you shoot RAW and also put out a modified JPEG that's actually like usable right away, which is also kind of nice.
Yeah, I actually put Halide on my front screen right above the camera icon. I'm not quite ready to replace the Apple camera with Halide. It's good to have both, right? Yes. Or no?
I find with all of those, most of what I shoot is with the Apple Apple camera, and then I use Filmic for some things. I play with Halide. I don't use it on a day-to-day basis, and so, you know, day-to-day I just take pictures with the camera because I want it to just work, and I get frustrated when it doesn't, but that's the one thing that happens there.
Yeah, it's nice just to have a camera right away.
Yeah. Oh, I got to shoot it. Yeah, exactly.
I don't understand. So there's three lenses on here, but they have four settings. They have the 0.5, the 1X, 2X, and 3X. Huh?
Yeah. Beautiful.
But it's not, they don't map to the lenses.
So the 1X is the main camera.
Yeah.
2X is the main camera with the quad pixel binning turned off, and instead it's going to crop to the 12. So it's not a digital zoom, but you're cropping to the 12 megapixel. So you're not going to get that advantage in low light conditions of the binning, but you are going to get every pixel of a 12 megapixel image. It's going to be cropped to the center of the sensor. And then 3X is the telephoto.
Would you be better off shooting 1X and cropping in the editing?
If you shoot 2X or you shoot 1X,
digital zoom.
Then it's pixel binning,
right.
And so you're going to lose that. So what you're doing is you're trading the extra detail and light capture of, which especially matters in low light, of the pixel binning for the actual individual pixels of that 12 megapixel.
Should people mostly stay in 1X?
If everything was brightly lit, I think you could shoot a 2X if it was a better frame, and it would be just fine. Keeping in mind that, you know, your alternative is going into 48 megapixel RAW mode at that point if you really want to get those extra pixels. It's actually the only situation outside of RAW mode where Apple is going to the individual pixels on the sensor is in 2X mode. Otherwise, it's going to bin all of those down, and you're going to get a 12 megapixel output. So it sort of depends on what you want to do. But if I was in a situation where I wanted to frame it and the 2X was a better frame, I would just shoot it in the 2X.
Yeah, it's weird, but the plain 1X camera, and no matter what phone you have, whether you have an iPhone 13, 12, 14, that's almost always going to give you the cleanest image. Like, the telephoto is great, all the computational stuff is great, but almost every maker, Apple included, makes sure that that's the sensor that gets the widest aperture, that's the one that has the greatest light sensitivity, and sometimes if things are a little bit sketchy in the lighting situation, or or people moving too fast, or anything like that, you find that going to the trying to force it to the 1X camera will give you the cleanest, sharpest image, and then you go into like your on camera apps your on phone apps to adjust the brightness and stuff like that. But you find that you avoided like the high ISO, you avoided like the motion blur, you got real depth of field instead of like sort of a hinky version of it. It's a weird thing to try to remember, but sometimes it pays off.
It's very confusing because you really don't get the Pro RAW 48 megapixels unless you use the main camera, the 1X. Is that right?
Right.
Right.
Yeah, that's the only 48 megapixel sensor.
Okay. So just keep that in mind. I don't know.
It does come up. I've seen a lot of people saying, wow, I can't believe this 48 megapixel sensor. It's amazing. Here's something from macro mode.
Yeah.
It's like macro mode's not on that one. Macro mode is using the wide camera to shoot in macro. Macro mode's great, but it's not really any or much greater than it was on the last model.
And just to reiterate, Pro RAW, the reason it's 75 megapixels is, it has all of the data from the 48 megapixel sensor, but then it also includes all the computational information that the iPhone has, right? So it's more than just a raw. It's not just the bits from the sensor. It's a lot of extra information from the iPhone. So if you the people who are saying on Reddit that they prefer to use Lightroom said you won't really get a very good edit in iPhoto because it's going to still kind of give you the JPEG. It's going to work on the JPEG and the JPEG's dynamic range. It's very complicated, I guess. I don't know.
I'll just say that the number of times where I think that, oh, well, gee, I'm a fancy photographer. I've got a really expensive, really nice camera. I have really great class. I'm going to apply these skills and this knowledge to using my phone camera, and I'm going to get pictures that are 10 times better than anybody else. And then every time I try to, like, outthink the computational photography model, I regret it so badly.
Right.
It's like that one button has so much thinking and so much development behind it that usually I just trust that one button.
So confusing. Yeah, just use the Apple camera.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's one of those, if you have to ask, then don't ask kind of things.
Yeah, unless you're super expert.
You know if you need it, and if you don't need it, don't turn it on.
Yeah, if you're super expert. I mean, they have, if you go in the Halide settings, by the way, Halide is now a subscription, unfortunately, but I think worth it.
If it keeps them in business, keeps them updating, absolutely.
Yeah. And if you go into the settings, now you suddenly have all of these capture formats, including something they call ProRAW Plus, which is the DNG plus the HEIC.
Yeah, that's the thing I was saying that Apple doesn't give you, but Halide will, where they will write out a JPEG, basically, or a HEIF file that is their best guess on what it should look like. And that means you get a more traditional file format that you could share or use without having to go in and open the RAW and convert it. And that's something that, you know, Apple doesn't want to really give you.
Should I? Okay. So I'm going to go with ProRAW Plus. 12 megapixels or 48. That's what it will choose on the main sensor by default. So you can switch back if you want. I guess stay in 12. I don't know.
Well, I mean, live a little.
Go for it.
Well, this is MacBreak Weekly. I think you gotta use the new stuff.
Save ProRAW files at 10-bit. No, screw that. Right, Alex, save them in all the bits.
All the bits.
Coverage.
Yeah, exactly.
What's coverage? Can get the best possible shots, but takes longer to take two shots. This makes capturing images slower, but JPEG images significantly higher. This setting has no effect. Yeah. Oh, thank God, when shooting ProRAW, so I'm not going to worry about that. Well,
I think that's one of those things where it's taking multiple images on multiple cameras in case you miss the edges of the camera.
Holy camoly. Mm-hmm. Save lossless TIFF in max format. I don't even know.
And if you know what it is, you know if you need it.
You know if you need it, and I don't.
I just want to get a picture of my kitty. I don't have to read stuff.
Well, okay. I think that's the whole thing, is that it's not. It's no longer, I just want a picture of my kids or my kitty. It's like, we're turning this into, especially on the pro end, we're turning this into a machine that you can really generate content with.
An amazing capture device, not just for photons, but for all the data around the photons.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. All right. So that's the camera. Anything else to say about the camera?
Yeah. I just wanted to mention, I did a few shots using action mode this weekend, and it's amazing, right? Like, you would not want to leave it on because it is going to degrade the quality of the image. It's using a lot of the edges of the sensor in order to do stabilization. But it really is like, you turn it on and it's like you're using a gimbal. It's really quite remarkable. So I think it's going to be great for... You know, that's where a regular person can turn that feature on when they're shooting their kids' football game or soccer game or whatever, or anything that's got action, or people doing, like, anything where you're moving the camera a lot, and you're going to get something that just feels way better than a, you know, simple image stabilization, which we have, you know, that's mostly to eliminate shake and keep everything clear. But the action mode really is like Steadicam mode. It's pretty good. It's not perfect, but it's very impressive that it's all just my shaky hand, and it comes out looking like it's got it's a camera on a track with a floating head, and it's pretty amazing.
You can't do that in anything but the 1X, right? Because you need the all. I don't know.
Yeah, I think so.
You need all the pixels.
I think that's right. Here's it's a specific mode too, right? You gotta go into that. You have to turn on action
video.
Mode.
And then I think this changes. Is it up at the top. There's a little running man.
Running guy, yeah.
Little
that's
running
it.
Man. Action mode, more light
and
required. Oh, it switched to the ultra wide, so maybe it's...
Okay, so maybe that's what it needs.
Oh, no, it'll work there, too. I can do it in all of them, it looks like. Action, little running man in all the modes, but you do need a lot of light. It's interesting that it actually tells you more light required. That's kind of cool. So in daylight, though, you know, this would be fun.
Yeah, it is. It is literally a feature you only want to use outside in bright light because it is doing a lot of weird stuff in order to get that output. But the output's spectacular. I mean, a really well lit room, if you were doing like a basketball game or something, I'm sure it would probably be okay. But it's like it's for that. It's for sports.
How about a
Roger Waters
concert? Hey, one surprising tip. Yeah, not recommended. I haven't yet got my case because, you know, they're making it or something. But I have my old iPhone 12 case. Wow, look at that. It fits right in there. No problem. No problem. So I'm using the old case, except little
covers
problem.
The camera a little.
Little problem. It's just a little bit. Not too bad. I don't know what lens that one is. It's got a little edge. You only see it in the ultra
scissors.
Wide.
Get some scissors out.
Yeah, you know, I mean, just cut that out there. Just got a little
X-Acto knife.
X-Acto knife. But the main the body fits in, so it's exactly the same dimensions. And even it's not a perfect fit for the on-off buttons, but it's close enough. I can do it. So just a little tip for you. You know, the silencer switch is just a little. Apple did not really redesign this. Now, it's very interesting because iFixit says there was a big redesign in the iPhone 14, not the Pro, but they have upgraded now at iFixit the repairability of the iPhone 14 to 7 out of 10, which is the highest an iPhone's been in years and years and years.
Yeah. They were really excited about replacing the back glass. It required a much, much stronger adhesive before, so a lot more finicky to get rid of it. Now they say that much, much weaker adhesive, so it's easier to get at, plus just fewer clips. Essentially, it's a common repair is now they designate it as much, much, much easier to perform
on
when they were
on previous phones, including the iPhone 14 Pro. You have to get at stuff from the front. You open up the front and you dig down. That makes it easy to replace the screen, easier to replace the screen, harder to replace everything else. Now it's iFixit says, this is the iPhone 14 reborn as a beautiful butterfly. The mid-frame is in the middle.
Don't say butterfly with Apple hardware, please. I'm still recovering.
You got PTSD from the accessible screen on the left, removable rear glass on the right. So that's kind of cool. So you can get in from both sides, which makes it much easier to repair. They gave Apple big props for this. They said this was not easy to do. They worked really hard on this.
I feel like Apple has been, there's this general trend, and it includes their new repair program, but I feel like that behind the scenes, Apple has been making their stuff slowly but surely more repairable.
Yeah.
And part of that is that it's a more mature category, and I think that they feel like they've got the room now to do some of this when before they were trying to cram everything in and glue everything together in order to fit. But I think also it's a financial calculation because, you know, if an iPhone, in certain circumstances, if an iPhone breaks under warranty, right, like Apple has to make those repairs, and it's hard. Nobody repairs more Apple devices than Apple itself, right? And so on one level, I do think that somebody maybe came in and said, we're spending a lot of money on repairs. Can you make it more repairable? And I know it's only in the 14 right now, but this is I suspect we're going to see more of this in future iPhone models as well, like that they want to make the individual pieces a lot more accessible, because not just to make iFixit happy, right, but bottom line stuff, that it saves Apple time and or money to do their own repairs of their products under warranty.
Highest repairability score since the iPhone 7, according to iFixit. Now, they did point out it looks like you will have to do software activation of some parts, which is, you know, kind of like the John Deere thing.
And,
That's too bad. That's not so nice. That's kind of unclear, and it may even be possible to do that, you know, as a third party. So, good on
Apple.
No
doubt you're going to be able to order your own back as part of the iPhone repair program at some point here in the next few months. Your own glass back. And it, not only will it be a lot cheaper because you'll only be replacing a much cheaper part, but it'll be a lot easier because you unscrew some screws and you can pull it off and replace it. So in the end, even if you want to repair it yourself, you're going to be able to do it, and it'll be much cheaper and less harrowing.
Breathtakingly expensive to replace the back on an iPhone 14 Pro Max. Or a 13. It's like, what? Because they have to take they have to go from the top down. Essentially, disassemble the entire phone in order to fix the back. That's not going to be true on the 14 Pro. Nothing, and I presume at some point on all iPhones. One thing, though, they also learned the losing the SIM tray doesn't save any space. They still have a place for it.
It can't because it's not lost on any other model worldwide, right? This is more of a, I don't know, a test in the U.S.
in order
to do this. Yeah. But like they talk about, well, you could put an SD slot in there, and I guess you could. But like what's really going to happen is the next version is not going to have it anywhere in the world, and they're going to use that space. Right. That's the long term effect here. But they're not going to design like a whole other feature that takes up a whole other set of space inside this thing, but only on the U.S. models. They just omit it from the U.S. models.
Yeah, and I think that it's probably safe to say that the iPhone 14 is also a test. Like, well, let's see how this works because they're not using as much glue. Let's see if there's reliability issues or if anything doesn't work, and then it would make sense. Yeah, this is part of Apple's always doing that long game thing where they're gradually
realize that the first wave of people who get these phones, they are going to be watched very, very closely by Apple engineers. There's usually a sort of a hunting license that's given out from Cupertino to Apple Genius Bar, saying we would like to give you here are some shipping containers. We want to see five examples of iPhone 14s that failed because of water ingress. We want to see three examples of a cracked back screen. We want to see eight examples of a back, whatever. And those are the times where you can come in saying, "Hi, I'm such an idiot. I can't believe that it slipped out of my pocket. It bounced out of my car. I managed to get on the third bounce, but the screen is all cracked. It's my responsibility. I did it." And then you find out that, oh, no problem. We will replace it for you for free because we're awesome and because we try to take care of your phone. And also because, again, because this is a brand new product, they want to get some of the stuff back and see how did it break, why did it break, and how can they prevent things from breaking in the future.
Do not drop your iPhone 14, however.
Don't do it.
Don't do it. Phone Buff YouTube channel dropped a bunch of iPhones and some Samsung S22s to see how they fared. TLDR, it was a tie. Don't. even though that, you know, Apple's touting this new Gorilla Glass Apple Ceramic Shield that, you know, maybe Samsung also has a ceramic shield of some kind. But, they still break. They still break, Phone Buff says.
I hate these tests.
I hate them, too.
Yeah. Not only do I hate them because these guys are, I mean, it's their money to buy a new phone and then break it. I remember when the original iPhone came out and we waited in line to get ours, and the guys at PC World waited in line to get theirs and immediately started throwing it on the ground to see if it would break. What are you doing? But the big problem is you can't test it like this. I think fundamentally you can't test it like this.
Yeah, what are they just dropping it? They're just dropping it.
Yeah, and it's one phone and it's certain angles. And it's like to really test this, and that's why nobody but the manufacturers can really test it. You really would want to do it like with 100 different phones with a bunch of exact angles and see what the different points are. And here it's like a random throw of the dice about what the landing was and what the force was. And I don't know.
I was waiting for my case, and so I've been carrying it around a little bit on its own. I've dropped it twice, and I can't even find a mark on it. Like I dropped it last night at dinner, and I was like, I went to that really good ramen place that we were talking about in San Rafael, and it fell off the thing, and I looked down, and I was like, it was like face down. I was like, well, there you go.
And the truth is, when this stuff happens,
I haven't broken a screen in years.
The reality is like it's not like the new glass coating or the new sapphire coating will make it impervious. It's a little like they're waterproofing too. It's like, well, we took the water ingress from dropping it in a toilet from 90% to 30%, or we took the drops like people like Alex would drop this phone and it would break 700 times out of 1,000, and now it's 200 times or 400 times.
It's the odds.
Usually, yeah. I have it in a case. I have a screen protector. I haven't had a nick on one for 4 or 5 years because I just immediately move into a case, and this one just happened to be different. Yeah. And I was like, I can't believe that I did that. And
that's
then,
why I stuck
so far,
mine in the old case because
leaving again until it gets fixed. I will say that the one thing I did learn is that if you are updating your new iPhone when you're on your old iPhone, I was on a phone call with my old iPhone. And I'm sitting there typing away like, yes, 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 on the new phone because I was excited to turn it on. And it just took the SIM. Like, it just took my phone call. And it, then I had like, there was like 3 minutes I couldn't call them back because the phone is in the middle of its update. And I'm like, now I'm just like, how fast can I get? No, I'll do that later. Because I'm trying to call someone back. But it literally just grabbed onto the SIM and moved my phone number over. It would have been really cool. We decided to be really cool. If it had grabbed onto the SIM and kept the phone call, go from one phone to the other, I'm going to hand off the phone call that you were on the other phone. But
did you hear that sound I just did? That was the turn off sound. You could turn the boot chime on. Now it has a boot chime. I'm going to turn it back on. Let's see if it makes a sound as it boots. Oh, it should go bong though, like a Mac, don't you think?
That'd be cool. And then the swishing sound of a 3.5-inch Sony disk drive.
I think we download stuff. It'd be good to have a sound effect.
Somebody somewhere should offer that as alternative boot sounds.
I don't think they can do it because it's in the firmware. Because it's before any OS even loads. It's making
right.
That sound.
It was before the Apple
OS.
Yeah.
The other factor, though, for drop tests is that oftentimes, like, you think you drop it, you do exactly what Alex did. You're like, I'm going to give myself 8 seconds before I pick this up and turn this over, because for the next 8 seconds, I don't know for a fact that I just destroyed my $1,300 phone. But then you pick it up and say, okay, wow, okay, I can't believe I dodged that bullet. But what you don't know is that you might have caused a microfracture that will make it more prone to break the next time, over time, if you drop it, you now start to forget the number of times you drop it, and now you think that, oh, well, gee, it says it's waterproof to like 2 meters. I'm going to take pictures of my kid having her swim class, and unbeknownst to you, like one of those drops, like kind of like broke the seal, the adhesive that's causing that stuff, and so now it's going to actually kill the thing. So
I've never actually taken it in the water. Like Jason, I still put it in a water case.
People wouldn't
if I'm gonna
do
take
that.
It in the water.
It's like, yeah, exactly. It's like it's so easy to get, like, even just you're sort of like, you know, halfway for $50, you can get sort of a halfway case where not like gasketed with steel bolts holding it together, pressurized to the Marianas Trench or something like that. But at least like it's the first thing that will fail before the big fail. And like every time someone was showing me, oh, look, my kid is learning how to take underwater photography with her phone. I'm like, oh, don't use it as an underwater camera. Go. I'll give you a list of $300 cameras. Yeah. Get an action cam because it costs like a no name one will cost you $150, and you can take great pictures underwater. Oh my
God. For all the claims that Apple continues to make about water ingress on the iPhone, I just want to be clear here. If it fails, you pay.
Yes.
That's it. They do not cover water ingress. It's not covered under the warranty. If the water, they're saying, yeah, it probably, they're really talking about, like, if you drop it in the toilet, like I said before, if you drop it in the toilet, it probably won't die. And whereas in the old days, it certainly would die. But they're not saying take it swimming. Like, don't do that.
I could tell you from first person experience, the first thing they do is they shine a little light in the lightning port, and they look at there's little paper in there that turns blue when it's been immersed, and they go, oh, you got it in water, didn't you?
but still, we haven't talked about this in a while, but there is sort of an informal, like, we're awesome policy, where if you are completely honest and you said, oh, I was just stupid, and I jumped in the pool, I forgot that I had this in my pocket, can you fix it, and can you do anything for me? There's a possibility, without a promise, that they will say, you know what, it was an accident, you tried to take good care of it, we're awesome, we want you to be happy, so we're replacing your phone, but realize that this was out of warranty. We didn't have to do this, and we were just doing this because we're awesome. It's worth asking, and it's always worth being completely honest, because if you come in there with, I was just using it like a normal phone, and that just stopped working, and I want to know what you're going to do about it.
Well, you especially want to be honest if you actually immersed it on camera.
Yeah.
in a podcast. When I brought it in.
Dead giveaway.
The guy said, yeah, I saw what you did. I was remember they had these guys at CES. They said, well, you sent us the phone, we'll coat the whole thing with this polymer so it's waterproof. And at CES they had these phones in aquariums, you know, just sitting there with working. So I said, well, let's test it. And so I sent it into them. And I got it back and I put it in a glass of water, and it immediately failed.
It died. Yes.
I can't remember if they gave me a new phone. I don't think they did. I think I had to buy it, but I think I was at a discounted rate or something like that. Mm-hmm. I don't think I paid full. freight. Anyway, that's a long time ago when I was young and naive. Let's take a break and come back in just a little bit. There's still lots to talk about. Alex Lindsay, Jason Snell, Andy Iannocco, Mac Break Weekly is on the air. Our show today brought to you by New Relic. I know a lot of devs, some of the most curious people in the world. They always, you know, want to explore the newest technology. They dig into the documentation. I'll put myself in this category. We not only want to know how things work, we want to know why they work that way. And if you're a developer or an engineer, that's kind of part of your job, isn't it? That's why so many engineers turn to New Relic. New Relic gives you all the data you need about what you build, shows you what's really happening in your software life cycle, a single place to see the data from your entire stack. I mean the cloud. I mean the edge. I mean everywhere. You don't have to look into a bunch of different tools and make those connections manually. New Relic has all the tools you need in one single app. And New Relic will pinpoint issues down to the line of code so you know exactly why the problems are happening, where they're happening, and how to fix it quick. That's why dev and ops teams at DoorDash and GitHub and Epic Games and more than 14,000 other companies use New Relic to debug and improve their software. When teams come together around data, it lets you triage problems. It lets you be confident in decisions, reduce the time needed to implement resolutions. And you're doing it using data, not opinions, not some guy's idea, but the facts. Use the data platform made for the curious. Right now, you get access to the whole New Relic platform and 100 gigabytes of data per month, free, forever, no credit card, nothing. That's right. The entire platform and 100 gigabytes of data a month, free forever. So there's no reason not to do this. Sign up at newrelic.com/MacBreak. newrelic.com/MacBreak. We thank New Relic so much for supporting MacBreak Weekly. I encourage you to use that address so they know you saw it here. That helps us. newrelic.com/MacBreak. Thank you, New Relic. Let's see here. Well, if you haven't yet bought your iPhone, you might be waiting, although not so much. I noticed I could pick up a iPhone 14, the one that's easily repairable, tomorrow. The iPhone 14 Pro, not so much. We're talking now October, maybe even November. I guess I should go to the store and find out. Let's just go shopping. Don't let me push the button, okay? I can't. I already have one.
You don't need one.
Push the button for me, Leo. Think about me.
Oh, you want a gold one, don't you? You want 512, don't you?
One terabyte.
Well, I think that's going to, let's see. You know, you have to go through all of this stuff before you can even see when you're going to get it. And I've clicked all the buttons, and it says October 26th. Through November 2nd. Maybe if I just sucka. Did you just say sucka? What if I cut it down to 128 gigs? No luck. Maybe if I get the one no one's going to get, the terabyte. No luck. It's all the same. Rats. How about if I don't get gold? I found that gold was the easiest to get. That's why I have a gold one. I think black is the most popular.
I mean, it seems like almost everybody that waited more than about 4 or 5 hours is somewhere in October.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I ordered it, I think I mentioned this last week, right away, 5:06.
5:08.
Yeah, 5:08, whenever I was able to get in.
I was at 5:08. You might have been 5:06.
That was Lisa's, and she's not getting it until sometime next week. So that's why I went back at 8:30 and I searched around for what's the crappiest phone no one wants. So is a Pro easier to get? Let's just see if a Pro is easier to get. Is it all October 26th? I have to go through the whole order process again if I shift that. Dep. No Apple.
Remember,
care.
You can always haunt your local Apple store. A little sooner. Get in their shipments in the morning.
Yeah.
If you go in the morning and see, I do in-store pickup, you may get it.
So that's what I did. It was 8:30 in the morning because I had... You know, I couldn't get through. I did that whole thing where you set it all up ahead of time and it still didn't work. But it worked out for me because when the one I did for Lisa was how I did that. And she's not getting hers for another week. So I got up, had my coffee, said, well, let's go see. Searched around. I found a gold one at the Corte Madera Apple store at 3:30 to 3:45, they said. And then you get a QR code on your phone. I go down there, and I sit on a bench with a bunch of other people waiting for my exact time. Mm-hmm. Show them the QR code. They say, great, get in that line. I said, oh, no. It's like eight people ahead of me. But I timed it 8 minutes from that point to getting the phone.
So fast.
The rep was very nice. Suzanne, she said, it's eSIM. Do you want to help you with activation? I said, I think I could figure it out. What do? Call them? Go on the web? She said, yeah. I said, okay, fine. So I got it. And I have my old phone next to it. Turn it on. It says, you want to upgrade from your old phone? I say, yes, as one does. And then it says, oh, you want to move the activation from T-Mobile on the old phone to the new one? I said,
yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, it's done.
Done.
Getting phone calls.
Just don't be on the call while you do it. Like, that's what I did.
Yeah.
You made a call while you were doing it?
I was on the call while I was setting up the other phone, and I was just like, just setting it up while I was talking to one of my producers, and suddenly just disappeared. Because it just
we have deactivated your phone, sir.
Yeah. Exactly. Just switch to the other phone, Alex. Just it's over there now. We put it online, too.
The only thing that would have been cool is if it just kept the call going. But outside of that, it was great.
I like how it also phrases it as like, I found your phone number and would you like me to move this number to the other phone?
Exactly.
And I thought that was like, you know, not talking about eSIMs or SIMs or anything like that.
Yes.
It's like, I'm going to move your phone number from this phone to this other phone. Is that okay? And you say yes. And then it's like, all right, done.
All right, there you go.
Awesome.
Amazing. Love it.
That was, I think even Suzanne, the wonderful Apple employee, hadn't done it yet because she was saying, well, we could take you to the front of the store. And I said, is it the web? Is it a phone call? She says, yeah, I'm not sure. I said, yeah, that's why we used to do it. Remember in the old days with CDMA, you'd have to call Verizon and say, I'm activating a new phone. God, hated those days. So the experience was very good. 8 minutes. Got it. They were very nice. I'd seen some people say there was a lot of upsell. You know, you're sure you want AppleCare, don't you? Or you'd need a case. No upsell. She didn't want anything else with that? I said, no. Maybe it was because
she had a long line to get through. That's how you got there. So
they were moving fast.
Like, just move. No. I don't have anything to talk to you about.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because a person comes to you. You stand with her at the kind of the front of the store. She says they'll be bringing it up. And so somebody just comes, brings the phone to her, and then she gives it to me. She said, you want to.
I spent that time. Go ahead.
What'd you do?
I spent that time trying to persuade her to give me one of those masks. A long conversation about how great the masks
did it work?
Were and who made them. And
did it work? No.
That I can't give you one.
We get one per day, dude. I'm not giving you one.
We're not allowed to give them out.
Oh, yeah.
I worked around it right up until the very end, and I was like, do you have any of those laying around? No, I can't give you one.
It was a positive experience because, you know, I remember waiting in line for many an iPhone, especially the first one. I was in one line at least 8 hours compared to 8 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
This is a much better experience.
This is Corte Madera.
Yeah. And then we went to Marin Joe's for dinner, and I took pictures of ravioli. It was great. It was a perfect day.
Marin Joe's is a good place to test.
It's a perfect day. I said, honey, can we go to Marin Joe's? She said, I hate Marin Joe's. Come on. Okay, fine.
Oh, so good.
It's old school. You get a great martini. But because of COVID, they no longer make the Caesar salad at your table, which I was disappointed. But that was fun. Our waitress, Pamela, very nice. She'd been there, I think, a long time. Looked like it. She said, yeah, I hated making those Caesars. So I'm glad I don't have to do it anymore.
All right, fine.
So that everybody else, similar experience. Well, Jason, you probably are using a loaner now.
Yeah, although I got my son's college phone. His first non-hand-me-down, and it came, you know, that morning, first thing, knock-knock on the door. 9:15 a.m. or something, and there it was. So he wasn't even awake yet because, you know, teenagers. And and then the rest of them
Dad, did you slip it under his pillow?
I knocked softly on the door. There was no response. He was dead to the world, and I just left it like the monolith from 2001 standing up on his desk. And when I came back later,
it was gone.
Strangely, there was like the box was open and empty, and the case box was open and empty, and the phone was already.
Long
and then
gone.
he emerged at one point and was like, how do I? And I had to walk him through the transfer process. But he had just never done it before. But you got to learn. These kids, they got to learn. He's going to college. He's got to learn to do it for himself.
what you should have done, Jason, is that, like, since he was dead asleep, you should have looked for, like, a pile of, like, dirty laundry and then, like, put the phone underneath it and then say, hey, son, are you going to, like, wash your clothes? Oh, I'll get to it. Okay, that's fine. Just get to it sometime, you know.
Make him
wait until...
You know, he's leaving in a few days. There's no way he would get to it in time. See, that's the problem.
Oh, darn.
It would stay there for weeks and weeks.
Or you'd have an excuse to go out and visit him. Say, I'm sorry, son, I missed you.
You didn't bring your iPhone?
I'm desperately sad that you grew up and you left me.
Yeah. Anybody, Alex, did you get yours delivered? Or did you went to the store, right?
I had to go to Cormodera. Yeah, that was the only way. Otherwise, I had to wait another week. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're probably there. I think you were there in the afternoon. I think we figured out that you were like 3 hours.
3:30 or something. Yeah, yeah.
That was like 12:30.
So. Yeah. Yeah. Because I wanted to go to Marincho's for dinner. So
I was already down.
We had the early bird special, though. At least Instagram it, and people said, why are you eating at 4? Because I got a new iPhone. I do, by the way, Jason, thank you for showing me on the old iPhone because it, by the way, completely copies everything over. This is definitely the way to install an iPhone nowadays, is say, yes, upgrade, do it from the iCloud backup. Make sure you do the backup before, you know, ahead of time. Do it from the iCloud backup. I hadn't finished the backup, and then so it said, well, what? You know, do you want to use yesterday's backup? I said, yeah, that'll be fine. I'll take yesterday's.
Should be okay.
That's going to be fine. And it copied everything over. It downloads all the apps fresh from the App Store, which is probably a good thing. That's the thing that takes the longest.
Yeah, but it does that in the background. It doesn't make you wait for that part. So you get a kind of a partially usable phone in the meantime.
It even copied over all of my lock screens.
Nice.
Which was great. Thank you for showing me that. I've been going crazy.
It's really interesting. It is part of, I think, why the upgrades happen so quickly for Apple users or for iPhone users, because it's so easy to go from one to the other. Like, I know with my Mac, like I want to upgrade a Mac and I'll think about it for a long time because I'm like, oh, the serial numbers and the thing and the thing.
Yeah.
And
this
I got to move
painless.
This stuff over. And I'm always like, and I know with the iPhone, it's always like, okay, we're done.
If
I don't think about
time
it.
Machine
all of this,
backup, it's
all
easy,
this is
right?
better than it used to be, though. All oh, of this yeah. is better than it yeah. used to oh, be. Yeah. Like I do as I'm, you know, reviewing these products, I'll tell you, moving to like the laptops, because every time there's a new laptop, I get it and I move my laptop over to it,
you
and then I have to move it back, and then I'll tell you, 5 years ago, maybe 6-7 years ago, Apple was really not very good at this. They have come a long way. The iPhone experience 5 years ago, when you bought, look, buying an iPhone should be the best day of the year, right? You'd be like, yay, it's new phone day. And for people who only buy a new iPhone every 2 or 3 years, even better, right? It should be like a day of celebration. You got your new phone. And 5 years ago, when you would upgrade, it was miserable, right? Like it would be, you know, where is my stuff? And I got to back up. And did I do it right? And it's not perfect. And there were still some issues because so many people get it on that one day that sometimes the back end servers are slow or don't work quite right. But I'll tell you, it is an area that does not get appreciated enough where Apple has made a big difference. It is so much easier than it used to be. And it's so many fewer bumps in the road. And you can get to your destination, which is an unlocked phone that you can use, a lot faster.
Yeah, we've been talking about like why Apple doesn't make more things cross-platform between iPhone and Android, and partly because of the great difficulty in creating an Android app that supports all Android apps. But you notice that they have a really beautiful switch to iPhone app for Android, and if that one was worth all the investment in, let's make sure we're not bothered that we had to make sure it works on all Samsung phones and all Google phones and all the OnePluses and all that sort of stuff like that. They really do make it it's self-serving, yes, but it's also serves the customer to make sure that whether you're going from iPhone to iPhone or Android to iPhone, it's as painful and friction-free as possible. They even put a really good video up that is not full of FUD, not full of like banging the drum about Apple. It's just quietly just saying, here are the questions you're probably going to have if you're considering moving from Android to iPhone. Here's very briefly how you would solve each one of those problems, and it works really, really great.
Evil IRC is asking in our chat, and I think he's correct. If you do the iPhone backup from the iCloud, it will log you into the apps, right? Are the apps set up?
It depends on how the storage is set per app. Some apps are great at it, even with the iCloud backup. Device to device is the other option, right? Where they actually talk to each other directly.
Yeah.
They still have to re-download all the apps, but it will copy your data over instead of using the iCloud backup. Some apps will say only to that backup. Others won't do it at all. So I know that some people swear by device to device. I found it slower and not
so
appreciably
easy.
Better.
Yeah.
And these days, I had to log into very few things when I made the switch. And the ones that I did, most of them were like the usual suspects. Like Slack always wants you to log in again, no matter what you do. I think 1Password maybe, but it didn't feel to me like I was being asked to log in everywhere I turned.
Yeah, so I had to log into Authy, my authenticator, and Bitwarden, my password manager, but I did not have to re-log into Instagram. So it is, and that's via the iCloud backup. So I think you're right. I think it's app specific. It's neither one or the other. I think I had to re-log into Twitter. Maybe the apps that are more security conscious.
Because some apps are basically like don't back this up to iCloud. Don't put these credentials
right.
in iCloud.
Right.
And
exactly.
Those aren't going to be there on your iCloud backup. That's
right.
The bottom line. And they will be in your device to device transfer because they're actually on the device. But that's the only difference.
Did have to re-log into my Reddit app Apollo.
Yeah.
But it was worth it because now I have a little teeny weeny kitty cat on my dynamic island. It's running back and forth.
I am so happy that Apple. I would like to believe.
You can't see. You'd have to zoom way in there. I don't know if you can zoom way in.
There's like a little Tamagotchi like kitty just like walks from left to right on top of the island and sleeps sometimes and does all these cute adorable things.
So cute.
And it's like I would like to think that some app reviewer at Apple had their finger over the reject button and said, you know what? I don't see a specific, I know it violates something, but I'm going to let this at least people have their fun for a few weeks before we formally say you can't do the dynamic island injustice this way.
You can't handle the dynamic island.
Oh, that's so cute. I tweeted about this after the update, and like so many people were like coming back with, oh, it's sort of like, remember when we used to have like eyeballs in the menu bar that would follow your mouse cursor, and remember the talking moose, remember all this stuff?
Oh yeah.
And
Elvis was my favorite.
Exactly. And I started thinking, gee, remember when like Macs were a lot more fun than they used to be because all of these system extensions that violated a lot of rules and made the system more insecure, blah 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 blah. But it's such a delight to see, hey look, I would love Apple to say, look, if you want to have a little kitty traipsing back and forth and gambling and romping and playing on top of it, that's not our business. It doesn't interfere with anything. We will let you have a kitty. Thank you.
It also doesn't appreciably increase the size of the dynamic island. It's such a little teeny kitty.
So cute.
Such a little teeny weeny kitty. We were talking about wait times. I didn't finish this up, which is, according to rumor mongers who may or may not be reliable, Apple is already shifting some of its iPhone 14 production to the Pro. There is a lot more demand for the Pro line. Analysts Daniel Ives and John Katsingris from Wedbush say the iPhone 14 Pro mix is up to 85% to 90% of phones versus back a year ago when it was just 60% to 65% at this time of the cycle. We know it's higher early on, but
Ming-Chi Kuo, who is a very reliable supply chain analyst, just did a Medium post. He's really getting into this. He used to be, I think, he got tired of being translated and quoted by 9to5 Mac, and so he now has his own blog on Medium where he writes about this and his own Twitter account. But he said, iPhone Pro models will account for 60% to 65% of total iPhone 14 shipments versus the previous estimate of 55% to 60%, and that Pro Max accounts for 30% to 35% and is the most popular model, which is, I think, a surprise that it's so tilted toward the Pro and toward the Pro Max. And this is with the 14 Plus not yet on sale, but I think they're anticipating that the 14 and Plus are just not going to do it like the Pro and Pro Max.
What is, you think it's the camera that's doing
it's
that?
The camera.
Maybe a little bit dynamic island. You don't get a dynamic island on the 14.
I really think that, I mean, I buy my phone based on the camera. If they hadn't upgraded the camera, I wouldn't buy a new one.
I think that's probably increasing the case. I was waiting for a bigger upgrade. I didn't upgrade last year.
Like, I don't know what else. It's kind of like one of those things. Like, I don't know what else I need. I just need that camera to be better.
Right.
Like, if they put better LiDAR in, or if they need, you know, but I always just want to have, I'm just trying to close the gap between this and a full frame sensor, you know, and so.
I'd say there's a lot less, I don't know, impetus to upgrade if you're upgrading to a 14, right? Those are more casual buyers. I would bet you that the lower price phones sell better in the second half or the first half of the calendar year than the second half, only because it's more casual buyers buying them. And even if you were somebody who was a year or two out from your iPhone purchase, you look at the 14 and it's not that dramatically better than the ones that were there before. And so, you know, I think all of the heat is on those Pro models. And so maybe that's the reason the Pro Max doing so well is really interesting, right? I guess that as somebody who doesn't like huge phones, I mean, look, the proof is right there, right? Like, people like big phones. Nobody has ever gone bankrupt making a bigger phone.
Did you strain your hand going from the Mini to the Pro Max?
I didn't go to the Pro Max. I've been using the Pro.
Okay.
But every time I pick up the Pro, I think it's the Pro Max because the Mini is so much smaller that I'd like this. Surely this is the very large phone, right? It's not. It's just the normal.
Yeah.
It's just the normal. I need some flexibility.
Stretching. Yeah.
It takes some getting used to, and in my pocket too. It's like, you know, this big phone is in my pocket now. It's a real adjustment for me as an iPhone weirdo who likes a small iPhone, because I am clearly not the smartphone audience if the Pro Max is the number one iPhone.
Right. Hanhai has been ordered, according to Ming-Chi Kuo, to shift some of its iPhone 14 production to the Pro models. Sales are strong in China. Wedbush says 30% of Chinese iPhone owners may upgrade to the iPhone 14 line. Out of the gate, retail servers in China crashed as consumers placed over 2 million orders in total for the Pro line in the first 24 hours. And as we said, the Pro lines go faster in the beginning.
I still think Apple could flex. I always say this every year. Someday that year they're going to do it. They're going to flex and say, we've got 4 new items coming out next week like that we're going to do an announcement for, and you can order them right now. Like, you know, just pick one. And I'd love to see what the numbers
look like. You mean like at random? Like, I don't know what I'm going to get?
Just tell you. Yeah. Like they say, we got 4 new things. They're going to be this price, this
well,
price, this
price.
Well,
that works for you. You did that. You used to
There's
do
a
that.
Lot of
You'd
people.
Call the Apple store and say, I'll take one of each. But, sight unseen.
I might have done that.
We were sitting in Herba Buena Center in the auditorium, and you said, Travis, I'll take one of each before they even announced it. Yeah. So you're that guy.
I think there is an argument to be made that people buy based on price tiers, right? Like we talk about all these features and we make a real effort to go into them. But if somebody said, we're coming out with 4 new iPhones, they're $799, $899, $999, and $1099, I bet you most iPhone buyers would just be able to say, oh yeah, I'll probably want the $999 one. And they'd probably be right.
Well, and the ones that would do this kind of random whatever, they could even just say, we're only going to sell the top end of whatever we're doing next week is going to be this much money. And then just, like, you can buy it now if you want. It just
well,
ensures you'll get
well,
it.
Well, there's an event coming up in October, Alex. I can't tell you what you're ordering.
I think it only works with the phone. Like, I think it's like, it's not, like, I don't think you can, maybe.
I've got a laptop for you for $19.99.
I don't.
I've got an iPad for you for $14.99.
I'm doing my best, David. I don't think it's going to work. So I mean, if they told me they had a new Mac Mini, I'd be pretty excited about that.
Yeah.
That's all.
No,
I really
they just
care
tell you the price.
Now.
They don't tell you what you're getting, just the price.
No. I think it only works with the phone. I think they couldn't do it with anything else because it's too complicated. There's so many other things to there's too many other little.
You know you're going to get a phone. You just know it, right? Yeah. I don't know. I waited. I wanted to. Well, I knew I was going to get it because I skipped 13. So I thought.
It's our job. Like, it's our job. We come here and talk about it.
So Lisa and I were talking because.
I tell my wife.
When we retire, we'll be on a fixed income. Living on Social Security and oatmeal. And and I said, honey, if we weren't in the biz, would you buy a new phone every year? She said, oh, yeah. I said, I wouldn't. I'd go 4 years. She said, no, I'm getting a new phone
every year. 4 years. That's a long time.
But remember, I'm living on Social Security and oatmeal.
I did have my Trio for 3 years. I think.
Andy, right? Your Trio you kept. Yeah, but that thing was a tank. You couldn't break your Trio.
Thing is that the Trio was like the thing I found it, like it's somewhere in my garage, but so technically I still have it, but the big thing before the iPhone, it was like every phone was just the one you hated less than all the other ones.
Right.
You know, like it wasn't.
No, it's so true.
It wasn't a phone you
God,
loved.
I had a Windows CE phone. Remember those? They were awful. Yeah. Blackberries.
I had to do a thing. I had to do a tour with a, what was it? The Blackberry with the touch screen. Oh, it was horrible.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The Storm.
Storm.
So that was the one.
I did a trip with that.
Lisa had that. Before she didn't buy an iPhone right away.
Oh my gosh, it was so horrible.
And I think she dropped. She was walking from the cottage to the brick house. She had dropped it many, many times. You couldn't break that thing, as bad as it was. The whole surface had to go down for a click. The whole front of the phone. She finally dropped it and broke it. And I think how we finally got her into the iPhone. It's probably a 3G.
I had to tear. I think I had to break my wife's razor.
Yeah,
like, we need to move on.
Got
to
get you a new phone.
Yeah.
Apple is number one on the American Customer Satisfaction Index, but it's pretty close. I think it's within the margin of error. They put this out every year in personal computers. Apple is 82, no percent change. Samsung, though, coming up, personal computers, 79 to 81. Maybe that includes phones. Then Acer, Amazon. Amazon must be a... What? Amazon? What? This is silly. They don't make a person... Is there an Amazon PC? No.
I guess they're talking about the tablets.
Tablets?
Yeah. Oh, the Fire... Oh, so this probably includes everything, huh? Then Asus,
all the Amazon people that are unhappy is when you buy it and realize you can't... Very useful, except if you're not using Amazon products.
Well, overall, Amazon had the best improvement, 7% increase year over year. HP dropped 3% year over year. You know, these are dumb. Forget it.
Yeah.
Forget I even mentioned it. It's a survey of 9,271 customers chosen at random, contacted over the course of the year. They were asked to evaluate their experiences with recently purchased products. This is for from the ACSI Household Appliance and Electronics Study, July 2021 to June 2022. Apple always is the best. Come on, just live with it. Get over it, man. Apple has improved, according to Federico Vitici, the battery percentage icon in 16.1 beta 2. There has been some, I don't buy it. I put on the battery percentage. I like it. The problem is the icon, you know, it doesn't reflect the percentage. Yeah. It goes from 100 to nothing.
Now it does.
Now it does. It shows it.
Now the number
picture
is less readable, but it's more accurate.
They listen.
If you want it, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't care. Like I'm low, medium or high is how I look at it. I think like three places for
Apple
me.
didn't want you to look at it. And I think they're right. It's an anxiety producer. For no good reason.
When it's full, I'm like, I'm not going to think about it. When it's middle, I might want to look for something. Right. And when it's low, I go, well, I better plug it in. But there's not, I don't like, the exact percentage is silly.
Yes.
In my opinion.
I agree. It is silly. But if you're going to do it, the number or the thing behind it should be more precise than it's all there until it's gone. Right. Like, yeah. That was a design mistake. Right. I get the legibility issue, but if you're going to say that it's 50%, you should show that it's 50%.
I think the problem is it declares an accuracy that's beyond the precision.
Yeah, it's like, right, like, because
that's the problem I have.
Battery percentages seem digital and they're not. They're analog. Yeah, they're not frightfully analog and not accurate because they're just measuring the voltage. And
it should really say 33 to 60%. And then it should say, or 0 to 30%. Like, well, that's about the accuracy.
And these days,
has.
It's like our model, based on the history of your battery and the way you're using it now and the current power we're getting out of it, suggests that you probably have 40% of your battery life left. But it's all like... It's exactly what you said.
They should just tap on it. Explain the whole thing to you.
Tap to explain how much battery life is left, and then Siri appears and tells you.
Here's what I found
on the web about that.
Well, right, because we all want it to be precise, and so they're going to give it to us in a way that makes us feel comfortable. But the truth is that batteries are like, weird and chemical, and they're trying their best. This is that same thing about why they got in trouble, because they were like recalibrating what full was, and then people said they were trying to hide battery degradation, which they kind of were, but then again, that's all part of the game. I understand why people felt that way, but it's also part of the game of being a battery person trying to explain battery to regular people, because they're not how they don't work like we think they work. So it's tricky.
All right, you convinced me. I'm turning off the percentage.
Turn it off.
Turn it off right now.
Just making you feel pressure that you don't need.
It is. It's an anxiety-inducing thing. Yeah, it's exactly. No point. Just like all you need is a blob.
Then you just got to turn off the other anxiety-inflicting thing.
What's that?
Turn off all notifications. Turn off all the badges on all your app icons.
Yeah, I don't like badges.
I literally turn off the overall notification, and I go through every app, and I'm like, nothing. Like,
I don't
want to talk to you. Don't talk to me.
You can turn off badges on the desktop, can you? I don't want any.
Yeah, you can turn off. You can turn off badges.
I go through that list.
You have to do it per app.
Per app.
I do it through every one of those apps, and I just turn it off.
I don't want both of them.
I'm like, I don't want you to do anything.
See all these badges? That's just annoying.
The roll-up badges and folders are the worst.
I got 1,728 somethings. Where? I don't know. Where?
Yeah, somewhere.
Oh, under Net News Wire. Sure, those are news stories. That's always going to be a huge number. Don't want to see it. But it doesn't say. It's just on a folder.
Go to settings, notifications, NetNewsWire, turn it off. And then you'll know.
Here's another thing to turn on in the settings. And this isn't quite as convenient as Google's way of doing it. It's an accessibility. This is the live transcriptions, live captions. And you can, if you want. And
how do you turn that on?
So that's under accessible. It's a little hard to find. I had to dig around. Yeah, let me get, and it's not as great as first of all, it's Siri. So it's spoken content. Is that right? No, that's wrong. That's wrong. It's not. See, this is the problem. It's hard to find. I don't know. I had to search around. Subtitles and captioning. Maybe that's it. Nope. You'd think. Nope. That's not it either. Live captions right underneath the beta. Okay. You turn that on. You could say what the appearance is going to be of the captions. Do you want live captions in FaceTime? Sure. Why not? Live captions in RTT. Is that? See, notice though, this icon is a floating icon. It's always in the way. I don't know what RTT is. That's that radio. That's that transcription. This is an accessibility set. But anyway, so now I have this dot floating around. You got to find somewhere good to put it. And if you're, let's go to YouTube. If you're watching a YouTube. I haven't downloaded it yet. So you'd think it would automatically download all the apps that you had, but it doesn't for some reason. You have to go through them and tap them. But it will. Maybe I'll do it on a song. I'll turn off the music so we don't get dinged. I wonder if it'll do it on a song. Oh, quiet, Usher. But let's unpause live captions. It's now listening. Let's see if it's doing anything. And maybe he hasn't. Maybe he's not singing yet. Sing, Usher. Sing. Nothing. Yep. There. I want to. What do you want to do, Usher? Make. Yeah. What do you want to make? What do you want to make, Usher? It's really good on Google on the Pixel 6, Andy, right? The live captioning. It's less good on Apple, but it's still it's a step.
It's magical on the Pixel, but Maps wasn't very good with the first release either, so they're going to get there.
Yeah. I mean, it's cool. I guess Usher just wants to say something. I'm not crazy about having this floating thing, but I left it on because that's a nice thing to have, especially if it's late at night and you don't want to make noise, but you want to look at TikTok. There was a story in the New York Times we talked about on Twitter on Sunday. More millennials are turning on live captioning than old folks. I thought I was turning it on because I'm deaf, but apparently the kids do it even more.
My kids turn it on all the time.
Like they live on it.
My daughter, who is 20, is turns captioning on all of her Netflix shows and all that stuff, and it's turn off
turn on captions for life.
We're going to have to turn on live captioning for you, Jason. You're starting to turn into a robot. Would you unplug it, and re-plug your... This is I'm sorry, it was a Wall Street Journal. It says, why do all these 20-somethings have closed captions turned on? I think
it's because they got used to it in Facebook.
Exactly.
Like in Facebook, you get used to seeing... It's really funny, captions. It used to be really easy for me to find a captioner for events. We just had a French captioner for an event on Sunday, it's much harder now to find captioners because they're so in demand because they're used for, you know, all the social media, because people got used to they're scrolling and they just want to see the text. They don't want to turn the audio on because they're probably doing it at school,
right?
Around their parents, whatever.
And it started on Facebook because companies like TasteMade and others, Kitchen, realized that if people are scrolling their newsfeed, the sound's off, they're going to get stickier and they're going to get more attention they caption what it was cooking and stuff like that, the recipes or the news
stories.
People
make a decision about whether they're going to turn on the audio based on the captions.
So that's how it started. Now TikTok, almost everything's captioned.
Well, then it was also combined with the fact that Christopher Nolan makes movies that we can't understand.
You can't understand. In a May survey of 1,200 Americans, according to the Wall Street Journal, 70% of Gen Z respondents and 53% of millennial respondents said they watch content with text most of the time. So it's going up. Mm-hmm. Only a third of older respondents, according to language teaching app Preply.
TikTok is also being used just as a search tool. Like if you're looking for information, a lot of
I saw that story. What does that mean? How do you search? What are you talking about there? What are they saying?
Well, just like you might go to YouTube if you're trying to figure out, hey, how do I fix this washing machine or whatever, a lot of people, they just communicate via creating a quick video. And if you're looking for information about what just happened, if you're looking for a recent video about what just happened, if you're looking for information about how to do something, you can go to TikTok for it. Although, if we both read the same article, one of the problems is that it's not necessarily validated information.
It's misinformation.
So you might find, and also TikTok is not terribly mature. And by that I mean that as a technology gets years after years after year, they figure out where the holes are and how to patch them. I mean, just now, YouTube is figuring out that perhaps we should have inline education on how to spot fakes and how to spot people who videos are trying to coerce you towards a point of view with fake information. So TikTok is now the best vector for that kind of stuff right now.
This is the story from Insider. Gen Z is increasingly using TikTok videos instead of Google search, but 1 in 5 contain misinformation. It's a new study that just came out by NewsGuard. It's a site that monitors misinformation. Jason, do we have his sound back, or are we still working
beep,
on that?
Boop, beep, boop, beep, boop. Hello. No, I just was going to say my daughter is 20, and she turns captions on everywhere.
Yeah.
It's absolutely a thing. And if she can caption the entire world and her entire life someday, I'm sure that'll happen. And I find it funny because we always talk about these kids today. They can't read. It turns out they do read. They read the captions. That's what they're reading. They're reading the captions on the TV shows they watch.
I guess they can't read cursive anymore. And I was like, I read some articles that can't read cursive. And I was like, I don't know if I can read cursive anymore.
And they only
want to
read
cursive.
One line at a time, right? Like one line of dialogue at a time. But it's a totally real thing. And I think it's amazing. And every time my daughter comes to visit, I sit down to watch TV and the captions are turned on. It's like, what?
They're on all the time. I'm like, who did this?
Netflix. And the problem is, I turn them off and Netflix turns them back on. They think they know.
I'm like,
that's right.
You
seem old or young.
Based on what you're watching, we've decided to give you captions.
House of the Dragon, the captions were annoying me because I wanted to look at the beautiful pictures. And so I turn them off. It depends on what you're watching. On the other hand, if you're watching Industry, which is that show on HBO that's in Britain, you have to have captions. They're talking. That's all talking like this, and I don't understand a word they're saying. By the way, do not roast your chicken in NyQuil, okay? That is apparently a TikTok challenge, and the FDA is warning.
That's a lot of NyQuil. Really small chicken. How are you? I'd be impressed if they even figured that out.
NyQuil contains acetaminophen, dextromethorphan, and doxylamine. And according to the FDA in a press release, social media trends and peer pressure can be a dangerous combination to your children and their friends, especially when involving misusing medicine. Boiling NyQuil or similar cough cold medicine can make the solution much more concentrated and change its properties in other ways. Simply inhaling the vapors.
Okay.
I'm just saying, if you're doing that thing, don't do it. Don't do it no more. I gotta take a break. We're gonna do more stuff, but we are not gonna roast chicken and NyQuil. So don't get your hopes up here. Although that would be a good
canned chicken. That's good. You should give it a try. That's worthy of your time.
And beer canned chicken. That's not usually what we call it, but that's good. It's better, more radio
beer
friendly.
Beer butt. We have a
so good.
So it all started when you take a beer can and stick it up the chicken's butt and then grill it. But I have a special device.
Stainless steel one. Yeah, I have the stainless steel one. Yeah, I find the Sierra Nevada with two lemons.
That's the thing. You could put anything in there, including, I guess, NyQuil. Yeah. Don't. But you could put anything in that. You don't have to have a beer
I'm
can.
I'm kind of curious about NyQuil in the beer
can. No, don't. Please. Don't do it.
I'm not going
to
do it.
Pepto-Bismol. It'll cause and cure indigestion at the same time.
It's hard to get me to even take
Oh, these kids, they'll do anything. Yeah. Our show today brought to you by ZocDoc. If you have a child who's roasting chicken in NyQuil, you might need to know about ZocDoc. Before you book a brunch, before you buy a Mac, you look at reviews, you look at lists, you check it out, right? You don't buy sight unseen, you listen to these shows. How come when we book something so much more important, a doctor, we don't? Well, because until now, you really couldn't get real verified reviews of docs. That's where ZocDoc comes in. Real verified patient reviews to help you find a doctor. And by the way, not just any doctor, a doctor in your neighborhood, of course, and a doctor in your network so your insurance covers it. Because I think finding the right doctor might be just a little bit more important than finding the perfect Eggs Benedict. ZocDoc, ZocDoc. It's a free app. Shows you doctors who are patient reviewed, take your insurance, and are available when you need them. And man, it's not just MDs. On ZocDoc, you can find every specialist under the sun. Whether you want to straighten those teeth, fix an achy back, get that mole checked out, anything else. I love this because, you don't have to wait. You just go to ZocDoc's mobile app, you search, you find, you book within a few taps. You could find and review local doctors, read verified patient reviews from real people who made real appointments. ZocDoc makes sure of that. So that when you go into that doctor's office, you're set to see somebody in your network who gets you, who works the way you want. Because doctors have different styles, right? Some like to give you all the information, all the deets. Some don't want to give you any information. They just want to tell you what to do. And you may prefer, if you're the kind of person who has the battery percentage turned on, you're going to want the former. Battery percentage turned off, you're going to want the latter. You get what I'm saying? Go to ZocDoc.com. Find the doc that's right for you. Book an appointment. And incidentally, there's still plenty of doctors doing remote appointments if that's better for you. And they have them on ZocDoc. Every month, millions of people use ZocDoc. They're there whenever you need to find and book a quality doctor. ZocDoc.com/MacBreak to get the app for free. Then start your search for a top-rated doctor today. Many available within 24 hours. I know you could go right to the App Store, but if you would, do me a favor. Just go to the website first, ZocDoc.com/MacBreak. That's how they know you saw it here. ZocDoc.com/MacBreak. What a good idea. I guess it's just obvious. ZocDoc.com/MacBreak. Here was a thing that bugged the hell out of me. And I thought, this is, I guess, a security thing. Messages would like to paste from Safari. Do you want to allow this? Yes. Every single freaking time.
Fixed in beta to release today, by the way.
Yeah.
Fixed.
In fact, an Apple executive's
that's a bug.
Told Mac Rumors. Oops. Ray Huang, senior manager at Apple, joining an email thread. He had sent an email to Craig Federighi and Tim Crook. He said, that's not supposed to appear every time you paste. That's, quote, this is absolutely not expected behavior. We will get to the bottom of it.
And I'm sure there was a bunch of angry meetings about that.
But, this came in response to the fact that people were seeing that TikTok, for instance, was always copying the clipboard. And TikTok said, well, we do that so you can paste it in automatically. So it's just, I think it's a good, I understand the motivation anyway.
Yeah, I think this was in the betas too for a while, and then it went away, and then it's weird that it came back, and I think that's what they're reacting to. It's like, I thought we had crushed that bug, and they apparently brought it back. Yeah, the idea is to warn you if a paste is going to happen without your interaction. But it was, you were saying, I want to paste this. And there's nothing that makes me angrier as a user of Apple products than when there's clear user intent to do something and then it wants to stop you or warn you and not let you do it. And that's in my mind, that is when their security goes over the line. Is like, I am pasting, just paste it. You're my device. I told you to do it. Just do it. And fortunately, this is a bug because, yeah, you should never have to, you know, double paste anything to get it in there. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. And aren't you relieved that like this was, they quickly identified this as a bug as opposed to did we want that to happen? Well, let's paste leave it in gate. Just in case, because I think didn't Dave say something about how we want to make sure that every time someone pays something,
Juan actually is on the patent for this feature, so he has a dog in this hunt.
Yeah, I mean you want it to be protective but not invasive. A lot of this is the line that all these companies have to walk, especially the platform vendors, is like a lot of Apple stuff is kind of invasive, where you like say, I would like to launch this app, and it says, I don't know if I want to let you launch this app, and there comes a time where you need to be able as a user to say, yes, stop asking me, I want to do this thing. And I know that the argument is, oh, but then somebody's grandma's going to get talked by a scammer into doing all those things to turn off all the protection and install spyware. And it's like, yeah, I know. But at some point, you have to let me use my computer the way I want. And fortunately, they let you get there, but sometimes it should be easier.
Are you on 16.1 now, beta 2, Jason?
My iPhone and iPad are just now, freshly, on beta 2.
You're a brave man.
But my Mac is not on the Ventura beta because I have a podcast to do instead.
I have work
to do. Can't
really
do that during the show.
Yeah.
No, wait.
I don't do any betas. I let you do them. That's your job. Sorry, Andy. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. No, I was just going to say, you heard about the really, really funny bug that they're going to be fixing next week where the camera, the phone starts shaking violently and uncontrollably. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's got to be related to the stabilization, the action camera. Yeah. So it's only in certain apps like TikTok and Snapchat, but that's kind of bad when you open Snapchat and it goes.
It's just Instagram. It's not a big camera app.
No.
I wouldn't worry about it.
Apple says.
I will say mine's not crashing. It's hanging a lot, like the new one, the new phone with 16.0. Like I get into messages and it just suddenly becomes unresponsive. And the only way to get out of it is to force quit the app.
Yeah.
And I've had that since I got it probably 5 or 6 times. So it's definitely still a work in progress.
It's weird because not everybody's getting this camera thing happening. So it's not a consistent bug, and which is probably why Apple missed it in testing. Right. They also heard, this is a little more scary, a loud grinding sound. I don't know if I'd want to hear that.
I'm trying to picture that, what that would be.
Don't do it.
I
don't like it.
Yeah.
Keep in mind that when they ship these things out, they're shipping with an older build, right? Because they start making these phones and loading them up with software. And so we get in this weird case. Remember how people always used to say, don't ever download .0 of anything? Well, if you're really concerned about this, don't get the iPhone on day one. Get it on day 30, because there'll probably be like 3 or 4 software updates between day one and day 30.
I go by, I don't, but I would, if I were a normal person, go by Alex's rule, which is not the first update, but the fix on the first update. So 16.1.1, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's usually when I try to wait, unless there's some feature that I just absolutely have to have.
16 is really worth upgrading to, though, I have to say. When you get your new iPhone, immediately have to go to 16.01. You get an update away.
Did 16 add the magical feature, which is called remove from home screen? Is that new? Or did I just not do it ever
before?
No,
that's been there for a while.
No, that came in with the app library. Once the app library existed, you don't have to have a one-to-one relationship.
I never noticed it before, and I was like,
isn't that nice?
Yeah. I can just delete them and search for them if I want to. Yeah. I was just, you know, I don't have to. I have to admit, okay, I'm a little behind on that.
There's also a weird thing that comes and goes on my phone. I noticed I can turn it off. That the three dots at the bottom sometimes says search. That's something new, right?
Yeah. I mean, and it's literally nothing new, right? It used to be like it's doing literally the same thing as if you swipe down.
Right.
But what they realized is people didn't know you could swipe down. Yeah. So they just replaced the three dots when they're not in use with a thing that says search that when you tap does the same thing, because which is clever, right? Because it's discoverability. They exactly. realized people weren't discovering how to search on their phones. So they just put a label on there that does it's like literally not a new feature. It's just a shortcut so people know they can search.
Has anybody unsent a message yet? That's new, right? Here's Joanna Stern demonstrating it. She sent this message, said, I thought better of it, undo send, and it stops. It's gone. So I haven't done that
yet. Not compatible with older OSs. So if you unsend a message, if you send something and unsend it, what you'll get on somebody running an older OS is this person tried to unsend this message and it stays there.
Oh, that's worse.
Only on the yes. current.
Oh, so don't use this. Don't use this.
Yeah, use this feature again after 90% of people update in the next
that's
3 months.
That's the 20, Donald 24. Trump, I admit my guilt message feature. Like, whoops.
I think, right. Same with editing. It says that you edited it to say something else, but it doesn't actually edit.
Oh, that's awful. So. That just calls attention to your mistake.
I would just tell you can't do it. Like, that person can't do the thing.
Wow. So, think about that before you edit or unsend.
Probably. I think it's going to be a great feature in 2024.
Any other undiscovered cool features that you were really excited about?
I'm still loving the lock screen widgets, and more apps are coming out that support lock screen widgets.
My favorite one is the slideshow. For some reason, at first it said, we haven't yet processed your photo album. I guess it has to go through your whole photo album. But now you can say, a pet, or in my case, a spouse. And every time I get a lock screen, it's a new picture of Lisa. And I have thousands in my photo album. So I really like that feature. Really love it.
Yeah, and there's one for like nature where you can say like show me nature or cities, and you've taken 20,000-30,000 pictures, and there's probably some nice nature photos, so it analyzes your library.
So it's your photos.
Same library analysis, and it's your nature photos, and it does a pretty good job. So, I think it needs to be better at saying this is a like. You can say this is a loser, don't use this picture, but you can't like do it in the moment. You have to go in and edit it and make a bunch of things. And that's the one thing that I would really like is because there was a picture of like a woodchuck or something that I saw when I was in Colorado. And like it was like, hey, isn't this a great nature photo of the zoomed in of this animal I was trying to identify? And it's like, please, I never want to see that again. And that part is hard.
So you go, again, discoverability on this one is tough. I didn't even know about it until you showed me last week, Jason. But you go to your lock screen, you press and hold. That'll let you configure it. And then when you say add new wallpaper, you have a choice of photos, people. But this is the photo shuffle, which I really like. And then you can do people, pets, nature. So you can have all of them. Oh, I didn't even know that.
Yeah. Or separate ones for each one or whatever you want to do.
And then you could do it on tap, on lock, hourly, or daily. I like doing it on tap because then you can use featured photos or select photos. I'm going to say, is Apple pretty good about the used featured photos? Oh, there's our kid. Oh, there's our cat. Oh, there's a swan. Oh, there's something. Yeah.
It's the same stuff that would show up in your widget if you had a photos widget.
Oh, this
on your
is kind of fun.
There's
my daughter. There's my cat again. Wow. Okay, that's really cool. That's really cool. That's a nice feature. What else do we like? I agree. The lock screens are great. I love changing the font on my time. I know it's silly, but I do. I like that.
The Discord mentioned the haptic keyboard, which is a feature that's been on Android for a bazillion years.
People love this.
iPhone users have not had it, and they put it in, and it's really, I turn mine on. I really like it. I love having just that additional feedback that I have pressed a key, and I don't ever have the sound on, so I never hear the the sound effect, but getting that little haptic feedback, it's really nice.
I really, really, really like that. Yeah, because I don't like it when it clicks at night and I'm typing or something. System haptics, where is it? It's Play Haptics. And ring keyboard feedback.
Keyboard feedback.
You don't want sound, haptic. But you do want haptic. It's just a little thing. But you then know subtle. That you've typed it.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really nice feature. I agree. Anything else people are crazy about?
I like that at least we're starting to see pass keys. I don't think you can use them with very much.
Seen a site with pass keys?
Best Buy, I think, has pass keys now.
I want to do it. Try it. Let's do a passkey.
Yeah.
Let's see. Hi there. Let's create an account. Yes.
You go into, I just did sign in, and it actually comes up and says sign in with WebAuthn, which is passkeys.
Oh, see, yeah. You'd have to know that, though, wouldn't
you? I think you've got to log in with your account first in order to do that.
Oh, yeah, there it is. Sign in with WebAuthn. So, okay, close your eyes. Everybody close your eyes. I don't want anybody to know that I have a Best Buy account. I only had it because for a long time I was trying to get an Xbox. Okay, let's log into Best Buy. Okay, I'm signed in now. And then sign in with WebAuthn. No, it says, hi, Leo. Sign out. Do I sign out now to do that? Signing me out. Maybe let's. Oh, I'm dying to get this. Let's do it again. Let's do it again. Account. Sign in. And now sign in. I get it. Sign in with WebAuthn. So it needs to know my email address. Okay. You haven't set up WebAuthn on this device. Please choose another way to sign in. Then you can go to account settings. I get it. Why are they calling it WebAuthn?
That's the standard, right? And the standard is across because Google and Microsoft
keys.
Are all going to support it.
It
is a better title. I mean,
everybody
calls
it
make fun
keys.
Of the Dynamic Island, but Passkeys is a pretty good name for it, right?
Yep.
Man. All right, so I'm going now to my account settings, set up two-factor email, face or fingerprint. Is it under change your password? No, face or fingerprint, you think?
Face or fingerprint.
Browser or operating system you're using doesn't support that. Well, I know that.
Continue with Touch ID. I just got it, yeah. And it said, that's it. So all I did on my Mac was go to face or fingerprint, and it said, continue with Touch ID, put your finger here. And then it said, that's it. Face recognition or fingerprint sign-in is set up on this device. And now that will sync with iCloud. And so now on all my devices, when I want to log into Best Buy... I can do it without a password. And it's cryptographically guaranteed, and there's no password to leak from their system, and it's all just kind of magic.
So there, as far as I know, who is using passkeys? They're the first one I've heard of.
In the wild, I think that's the first one I've seen.
Yeah. That's great. I mean, it's too bad it's Best Buy, but it's, I have no use for it, but no, that's still great. So I should do it on my iPhone or my Mac, something with fingerprint. Or Face
right.
ID, yeah.
Yeah.
Neat.
I'm just so glad that it really is a common standard that's not going to just simply say, hey, this is going to be great for Apple people, but what happens for everybody else who's using any other kind of device? I mean, it's a common enemy that needs to be slain, and it is passwords that people get to choose by themselves.
So true. So I'm just quickly doing this on my phone. Sign in. Okay. Yeah, okay. Now, if I go into my account, you're saying I should be able to sign in.
Yeah, by fingerprint or face, I guess, is what they call it. Which is funny, because that's Best Buy trying to explain what WebAuthn is.
Yeah, in fact, I didn't really understand what they were talking about.
Yeah, it probably is better to say something like sign in with face or fingerprint everywhere.
Yeah.
Because that's the idea here.
Face or fingerprint sign in. Set up on this device. Do you want to now Apple says, do you want to save a passkey? Passkeys are saved in your iCloud keychain. Yes, I do. I love the Face ID Dynamic Island, by the way. And I have to say, it seems like it's a little faster. Okay. I just did set it up. It wants me to do it again. Okay, Best Buy. Set up failed. Well, never mind.
Oh.
Never mind.
I think maybe you actually did set it up and it just didn't do it.
Oh, so should I log out and try? I really want, I want everybody to see how this works. Let me sign out. Sign out. Okay. Signing you out. Good. Yeah. Now sign in again. Sign in. No. Didn't do it. Oh, wait a minute. Sign in with WebAuthn. Nope.
Yeah.
Wants my email address so, still.
Suddenly, you got to put in your email address.
Is looking pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. It wants your email address, and it'll autofill it, and then
it did
do
it.
Your.
I didn't have to do a password.
It, and that's it. Then you got it.
Nice. It.
I mean, there's no password. So they know who you are
funky, but...
through your email address, but you don't have to have a password, and they don't have to have a password, and it's just a key exchange that happens cryptographically.
Right.
And as Andy said, it's coming to every platform.
It will be
probably
everywhere.
Even it'll be on your Linux platform eventually, Leo. Eventually.
So I don't want to use a password. I want to sign in with WebAuthn. It still wants my email address, I guess. That's still part of it.
That's
then
part
it did
of the
Face ID, and now I'm in. And Apple is asking me again to make sure I want to do that, and then it says yes, and then I'm good. Okay. Yeah, I mean it's actually not easier or faster than. If you have a password stored in a keychain, it's like that, but okay, fine. It's good. It feels like the workflow should be a little bit more straightforward. I don't know.
Early days.
Austin Mann in Scotland. We always like to see Austin's reviews of the iPhone. He seems to be somebody who can really, you know, put it through its paces. He's on the Duncaton Estate in the Scottish Highlands. Look
at
that.
Lots of places to take pictures.
Ultra-wide Pro RAW files stitched in Photoshop. Nice. Massive megapixels. There's a chicken. A Scottish chicken. There's a close-up of a Scottish chicken.
It's a very foul test.
Yeah. Ooh. Look at that. Look at that 100% zoom on the 48 megapixel Pro RAW. That is a lot of detail. That is not as smeary as those big zooms usually are. Boy, that's pretty.
Yeah. I mean, we see so many AI algorithms for image processing that might be able to take something that looks rough off of a RAW and then reprocess it and add sharpness and detail. There's a lot to love about having that many megapixels on a sensor, and I can't wait to see third parties coming through.
He says, after a few days using it, I probably leave my settings to 12 megapixel Pro RAW, only push it up to 48 megapixels when I need it. 12 is still where the camera really shines. Plus, capturing in 48 is a bit slow. And storage is also becomes a premium. He says also he seems as battery life seems to get zapped when shooting all day at 48 megapixels. So you the 12 megapixel Pro RAW. What do I get with 12 megapixel Pro RAW?
You're getting a smaller file that is using the quad pixel binning, right?
Okay. So where do I set that? Oh, it's so complicated. Life is so complicated. So you just turn on RAW. And I set it, by the way, this is a new feature. You could set the camera to remember the settings. So once you do that, turn off live too. As much as I like live, that does not give you the best image quality. Is that right? I believe not.
So. No, it'll capture. It's just capturing a movie around the.
Oh, okay. So I can continue to do live. Oh,
up to you.
No live and RAW though. It's one or the other. Don't get your hopes up, Leo. All right. So now I think it'll remember that from now on. Let's close it out. Yeah, it stays in RAW. Oh no, it doesn't. No, it did. So if you set it to remember your settings, which I think. You know, that way, if I put it in a video and I leave, it stays in video. I think that's a nice feature. I don't know if that's new or not. I didn't notice it before, but it stays in whatever. Because in the past, the camera would jump back to the default.
Yeah.
Let's see what else. I am not going to talk about rumors about the Dynamic Island on iPhone 15. I am not. I will not.
I actually, I put a link to a story in there, and I did my own editorializing. Yes, we have officially gotten our first story telling us details of the plans for the iPhone 15. Make it stop.
Stop.
Make it stop.
Nah, well,
moratorium. It's just your band.
We're going to stop it right here, right now.
2023. Check back in.
Gentlemen. And ladies, if you're here, prepare your picks of the week while I talk about my lovely night's sleep on my 8 Sleep Pod. Is the ultimate sleep machine. I just love it. 8 Sleep, you know, it takes the idea of some, you know, a bed warmer electric blanket to the next level. It's a bed warmer and cooler. It does both. It does both. And it turns out that's the best way to sleep. You don't want to sleep hot at night. On those hot summer nights when we were getting up into 113 degrees and it was just burning hot, I set my 8 Sleep to cool me off. It goes as low, believe it or not, as 55 degrees, which is pretty chilly, or as high as 110 degrees, which is pretty warm, or anywhere in between. Good sleep. I don't think I have to sell you on the value of a good night's sleep. It's good for your health. It's good for your state of mind. It's good for you. And still, more than 30% of Americans suffer with poor sleep. Feeling hot at night is the number one cause of poor sleep. I've solved it. I have just totally solved it. And I encourage you to do the same with my 8 Sleep Pod. I wanted to say cover. They sell both 8 Sleep mattresses. But since we had a really nice mattress, we just got the cover, which goes over any mattress and gives you the same benefit. Clinical data shows 8 Sleep users experience up to a 19% increase in recovery, up to a 32% improvement in sleep quality, and up to 34% more deep sleep. Deep sleep's the key. Deep sleep is the garbage cleaning of your brain. And the way the 8 Sleep works is so clever. So I mean, you might have different ways. I have it set. Here, I'll show you my 8 Sleep. I have it set. That's my sleep report. I have it set to be cool. It's off right now because I'm not in bed. It starts a little warm. I have it set to like +2, sometimes +3 at night. And then as the night goes on, in deep sleep, you might want to cool it off. In fact, I do. In fact, I even go down a little bit to 0 or maybe even -1. Then you get a deep sleep. And then for REM, you might want to bring it back up a little bit, warm yourself up. And then I love this because you can have a wake-up schedule that warms up your bed to get you out of bed. But then the best thing about the 8 Sleep, I have the autopilot turned on. Autopilot then watches how you sleep. And they notice, is that too cold? Are you tossing and turning? Is that too warm? And they adjust your sleep based on the room's temperature. So if it's a really hot night, it'll fix it. Best based on your feedback, based on manual temperature adjustments, and based on how you're sleeping. It's unbelievable. 8 Sleep, we're going to have to get this because we have the original pod cover. They just launched the next generation, the Pod 3, which enables more accurate sleep and health tracking because they've doubled the sensors. And which means, of course, more accurate temperatures as well. I mean, I'm very happy with our pod. It's not magic, but it sure feels like it. It's so nice to get in a nice, toasty, warm bed and then sleep so deeply because it's cooled off at night. And I mean, my deep sleep now is so deep. Go to 8sleep.com/MacBreak, E-I-G-H-T, sleep.com/MacBreak. Winter is coming. You know, during the hot summer, I was having it cool me. During the cool winter, I'll have it warm me. It does both. 8sleep.com/MacBreak. You'll save $150 at checkout. But you got to go to that site, 8sleep.com/MacBreak. Kevin Rose told me about this on a Twit episode, and I was skeptical. And then Amy Webb got it, and she said, no, it really works. So I got it. We got it about a year ago. We've gone through a whole winter and summer now, and I could tell you, it works. It's so great. 8 Sleep currently ships within the U.S., Canada, the U.K., select countries in the EU and Australia, too. That's 8sleep.com/MacBreak. It really is so nice. So nice to sleep so well. Jason Snell has a puzzle for us.
I do. If you love the Wordle, or did you try the Wordle, or do you do the Wordle every day?
Gotta love the Wordle.
Let me give you something new you can play. It is called, oh yeah, I love Wordle after it turns into a word dazzle or something. And is that how Pokemans work?
It's a lucky Wordle.
The Tim Famous. I know it's not Pokemans, but that's what Tim Cook called them, and I love it. It's Not Words by Zach Gage, who is, for my money, the best iOS and probably best game developer on the planet for these kinds of games, for casual games. Has made so
this
many great games. It is using a crossword puzzle mechanic, and the premise is you're given the crossword puzzle shape, and inside it there are little blocks that have particular letters that are in those blocks, but you don't know where the letters go. And so you have to puzzle out based on the letters that are there and based on what maybe you've got clues from the crosses, what the actual words are in the puzzle. And if there are mini puzzles that you can finish in about a minute or two every day, there's the classic puzzle, which works kind of like many other crossword puzzles, where Monday is easy and it progresses through Sunday and gets progressively harder and changes over the course. And then if you're really into it, they have this twisty puzzle where you have to get everything exactly right, and it's extra tricky. But the classic, I think, is good. It's free within app purchase, so you can kind of amp it up if you want to. But I love it. I play it every day. My wife plays it every day. It is a huge amount of fun. It is going to use the crossword puzzle part of your brain, but with no clues.
I'm going to do it. Goodbye. What? Did you have something to show us? What? What?
It's too late. Leo's gone. Yeah. It's really
how
it's
much
really
if
good.
I want to buy it? How
mechanic.
Much? $5 a year, or buy it outright for? Well, I'm definitely going to buy it outright. I already paid much more than that for the New York Times crossword puzzles, and this sounds better.
Yeah, it's really good. I mean, it's not a crossword puzzle. You're not going to get the kind of
clue
part of it.
Yeah.
But the trying to form words and figure out what the crosses are and knowing what words are valid or invalid, it's so good. It's so well done. And all of Zach's games are like that. But this is, one of the latest and greatest, and I love it.
Just bought it. $12. My God.
Yeah, and you can try it out for free. But it's a really good, just a nice spin. This mechanic, I can't believe nobody seems to have thought of this before, of using the crossword. It's almost like you're building the crossword puzzle, and then you would, at the end, you would come up with the clues.
Yeah,
it's kind of that, how that feels. It's a lot of fun.
So it gives you hints, so you don't have to, you're not completely blind.
That's the game mechanic, is it'll say there are two blocks, and one of these is an A, and one of these is a J. And then you have to start to figure out, like, okay, well, AJ is unlikely to be the combination, so I'll do JA, and then, and you go from there.
Oh, this is hard. I want my money back. It's too hard.
I want something that reflects my self-image as a smart person.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, at least you don't need to know what words mean. So there's that.
That's true. And they're all English language words, I presume.
They are. They are English, real English language. Every now and then you get one where you're like, really? But
that's normal. That's how games work.
Pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's called Knot Words, Knotwords, and because it's Zach, it's also got a great UI and everything. It's very
and this is iOS, Mac, and it's in Steam,
it's
on Google Play, so it's everywhere.
So what's a puzzle book?
Those are extra puzzles. So you get a puzzle a day, and then you can get the puzzle books, or you buy, maybe that's what you pay for, and then you. So if one puzzle is not enough, you get a like 25 puzzles or 30 puzzles for the month.
Yeah. They must be. They must have some auto generation capability.
Yeah. So it's Zach Gage and Zach Schlesinger are the authors, and Zach is the kind of game app designer guy. But my understanding is Jack Schlesinger is the one who created the puzzle generator, right? And so they have a really interesting back end where they're creating puzzles and rating them based on difficulty, and then those get dropped in for your daily puzzle. So they had to create kind of like, right? It's not just the puzzles have to come from somewhere. So they have a puzzle generator working somewhere that is cranking out the right puzzles for every day.
Nice.
It's good.
Andy Inoko, pick of the week.
Mine is a really cool open source image scaler upper based on AI called Upscale. I just got it like last night. I've been playing with it like pretty much nonstop since then. It uses AI learning models to take a lower resolution picture and scale it up to a higher resolution picture. And a lot of times the results are really, really impressive. The catch is that despite my wishes and despite how many times I've tried to give it a low resolution blurry image and turn it into a higher resolution perfectly good looking image, it doesn't really work that way. But it tends to have some pretty good results if you start off with a lower resolution sharp image, like a good one, and then, but it will scale up. I put in a link in the show notes to I gave it like a really old like 1990s picture from Mac Hack, 800 by 600 pixels that I downloaded from my own Flickr account, and it upscaled it really nicely to like 3400 by 2800.
Oh, wow. That's a big improvement.
Yeah.
Look at
and
that.
Yeah, and that was so it's not like it's not a tool that will work great for everything, but when it works, boy, it works nicely. And sometimes when it doesn't work well, it actually gives you kind of a cool like painterly effect. Like you can actually, if you're not necessarily looking to create a nicer quality image, you just want to see what it'll do to a certain image, you can run it through the combobulator like twice, three times, and sometimes you'll get a really nice, interesting like AI effect to it. So it's not just doing like the basic like image sharpening algorithms. It really is using an AI model that was developed by Tencent to try to figure out what's in this image and try to create what's not in there to begin with. And it's the other caveat is that it is open source, so it is very, very open sourcey when it comes to interface. It is basically like a HyperCard stack almost. It's so simplistic. Also, it's not going to work on every single Mac out there. It is multi-platform. It works fine on my M1 MacBook. Did not work on my surprise my 10 year old Mac Mini. So your mileage may vary. It does have to have a GPU somewhere in the system in order for it to work. But again, it's free. This is the second major release they've done, and he's trying to. He wants to keep updating it with new image learning models, new techniques. And I'm definitely going to be in there for the ride because it is a fun app and sometimes a very useful app.
It's one thing people are doing now. Also with those AI image generators, they're giving them a sketch, sometimes yeah. like stick figures, and then having Stable Diffusion or Midjourney or DALL-E finish the sketch. And it's actually kind of remarkable. I've seen some really good, this is Stable Diffusion on this one, but I've seen some really good examples of people taking stick figures and turning them into, let me see if I can find another one, turning them into something. Ooh, some of these are kind of sexy now. Turning them into something very artistic.
Yeah.
So I guess you have to know what you're doing with your prompts and everything, but still.
These initial demos of, hey, look, how about a donkey spaceman eating cake on the planet Fizbane from the Muppet Show? I mean, that's a fun, like, tricky, fun little trick to play, fun little demo. It's going to be great, like, a year from now when they are taking these models and building specific tools out of them. Like, when we get to the point where I can spend a month or two training this model for, here is what I like, what I want people to look like, here is what I want environments to look like, here is how the sort of painting that I like, I don't want you to just simply take a Picasso style, I want you to start with this, I'm going to teach you what I think a drawing should look like, and then the ability to like do an entire comic book by simply doing these stick figures, and then when a stick figure is not emoting correctly, taking that picture that was generated and putting a bigger smile or basically something that will indicate turn the head to the left and make turn art into an iterative sort of process that anybody can access. I don't think they'll be at the same level of like an Adam Hughes or a John Byrne or anything like that. But just like iMovie opened up visual storytelling and non-linear editing to people who just have an interest and want to screw around with it. This is the acorns from which mighty oaks can grow. So this is why I'm super excited by what happens when more of these models become more sophisticated.
It really exploded when Stable Diffusion came out because you could install that on your own if you have a good gaming machine. And now I'll make this my pick of the week. There is a version of Stable Diffusion for the M1 Mac. Devon Gupta has actually bundled it into something he calls Diffusion B, which it makes it, now you don't have to have a super high end, but it would help to have a higher end M1 or M2 This will run locally on your machine. I have not yet tried it, but I hear very good things about it. It makes it very easy to install instead of a Docker image or something like that. So diffusionb.com if you want to play with Stable Diffusion on your Mac.
One quick last, but you reminded me that Upscale does run locally on the on your computer. It doesn't contact another server, so it's all...
And some of these things
take, like, I have, for the first time in years, it was nostalgic. I was able to, like, look how slowly it was processing something, a big challenge that gave us. Like, wow, I actually have time for the first time in years to use, oh, no, my computer's all tied up. Maybe I should just go down the street, get some waffles, then come back. I hope it's done by the time I come back. So thank you. I had breakfast today. Thank you, because I was gave it something, a stupid task that it was not really designed to do well.
It is open source. It's on GitHub, and they have versions for Linux, Mac, and Windows. Plus, you can get the source code and build it yourself. Yeah. So,
command line and batch processing.
UPSCAYL, Upscale. Kind of cool. Neat. Hmm. Alex Lindsay, pick of the week.
So, in my journey to build this, the new Skypeosaurus, essentially, I figured out this is a kind of an expensive one if you put them all together. But in my world, it's much less expensive than what I was doing before. So, so there's three pieces to this, and I'm going to show you two of them. One of them didn't show up yet. We use them at the office already, so I know that it works. And that's the Sonnet. That's the link I gave you there. The Sonnet box. So that holds.
I know it's expensive because it's just a black box.
Yeah, exactly. That's the ultimate black box. That is the least expensive thing. That's about $300. This is what I'm putting in it. So this is a Blackmagic, what's called a quad card. So this will do four in, four
out. So the Sonnet is just a PCIe container that plugs into your computer with Thunderbolt 3 or 4. Okay. Okay.
So then you put this in. And what the big exciting thing about this is that it's high density out. So I can get up to 8 outputs. out of this card. So I can have 8 video outputs from, in my case, Zoom, you know, for this. So 8 different people.
Are you taking notes on this, John? All right.
So
this is for Zoom ISO, right?
Yeah. And the problem is you need a little switcher for this, you know, so you need to be able to switch this. And so what I got here is the Blackmagic. Now this is the same ISO that was done. This is what I run my show on, like when I'm switching between things, except this one's a little different because it uses SDI. So instead of HDMI for the old ISO, this is my new one that I just
bought. They also support NDI, and, right?
It supports NDI. Well, the switcher doesn't support NDI. No. Blackmagic doesn't use NDI. No. Now, if you want to do NDI, what you should do, I'm going to be building a bunch of different versions of this because I want to see, you know, different ways of using ISO. And so with my Mac Mini, I'm using this. With my studio, I'm going to use Mimo Live from Boinks, you know, to pass that all via... I lost my head. But anyway, so I'm going to Siphon. So Siphon is how I'm going to pass from Zoom ISO to Mimo Live, is using Siphon for that. And then I'm passing, but to do a hardware version of it, I'm using this with a Mac Mini. It's actually less expensive to use this with a Mac Mini than a studio. Anyway, these are the pieces of the puzzle. I'll probably show them in the future as they get closer together. And we're going to be doing lots of labs and office hours to talk about how to get this all working. But what it means is that you could run a pretty darn good show with just a little bit of hardware.
I love it.
You know, yeah. But we've been struggling with this for 15 years, you know, since Colleen built the Skypeosaurus.
It's amazing.
And now it's literally getting down to this little switcher, this little card and a Mac Mini. And a couple
really
monitors.
Makes me kick myself that we have 4 more years in our lease at this studio. just go home.
Well, the big thing is that you know what we've had trouble with is that we have $500,000 of hardware that does that does bigger shows for 090, and then Office Hours has its own little set of hardware that it just uses. That's not $500,000; it's like a $75,000 worth of hardware.
And now it's better, right?
And it does a lot of things on it. But what's happening here is that this is for, like, if I want to do, like, I'm going to be starting to do the Michael Krasny show with this.
So this is
going to be like the R&D where we can do super sources and we can do lower thirds and all the things we want to do. But it's just one person running this relatively, be a $3,500 kit that one person's using. And it really, if it works, we're kind of on the front edge of it. But if it works, it's a, it really democratizes really democratized.
I want to buy this Sonnet. It's $350 just to put other things in.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you could put any PCIe card in here, right? So storage. Yeah.
It depends on how long they are, if they're full size or whatever. It fits the Blackmagic boxes, the cards. There's bigger ones that'll fit larger cards. There's ones that'll hold three cards at a time. I'm choosing to just use the one. There's part of me that thought I should have gotten the three slot just for
sake. Could this be an eGPU on Intel Max?
Yeah, that's what we used them for originally.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It was eGPU, but mostly now we use them for video in and out from the Mac Minis.
Nice pick of the week. And, of course, you'll find out more at officehours.global in the days and weeks to come.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of talk about building remote shows. Like it's definitely a kind of obsession of ours right now.
Take notes, John. Take notes. I want to just quickly show we have a chat room pick of the week from Evil IRC, the first game I've ever seen that uses the dynamic island. It's a Pong game called Hit the Island. And the idea, I'm going to replay it now. The idea is, here's the ball. It bounces off the dynamic island, which does a really nice little effect as you hit it. Isn't that hysterical? It's free. This ad supported. Hit the island. I don't know. I guess you get a point every time you hit the island. I don't know what else happens. Maybe something else. It seems to be changing.
Yeah, eventually you get into like multi-ball and it gets more complicated.
So you know about all this and you didn't tell us. Hit the island. Very cool.
It's so early. It's all novelty.
Yeah, it is right now, right?
Material right now. It's like those beer pouring apps in the iPhone days,
yeah,
right?
Remember
like,
that? Yeah.
It'll settle down.
Also, let's see how long Apple lets everybody have their fun before they say, okay, you know what? It was funny at first, but now.
Well, they specifically said, you know, we're going to give you an API so apps can do it, right?
I don't think they had Pong in mind. I thought.
Well, this is a good use of the dynamic island.
No, I'm glad they're.
I feel like the island should be more expressive, though. Like have a face on it that goes, "Ow, ooh," that would be more fun.
Dr. Mario.
I want to hurt it. Hurt the island would be more interesting. I'd pay an extra dollar. It just goes boom. It's pretty cool. You think Apple? No, Apple's not going to have anything to say about this. You never know, do you? It's Pong. Who would have thought?
Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no. People are enjoying something. We have to kill that immediately. No.
Yeah, I hear a child is having fun in here. Who would have thought that when I was sitting in New Haven, Connecticut at a bar playing, this would have been 1974, 75, let's say 50 years ago, playing Pong, my first computer game, that someday I would have a phone in my pocket that I could play the same stupid game on, minus the White Russians. Andy Anako, when are you going to be on GBH in Boston next?
I'm off this week, but you can check me out next Thursday at 12:45 in the afternoon. You can watch me and listen to me at WGBHnews.org, live or later.
Thank you, Andy. So nice to see you.
Always lovely.
Mr. Jason Snell, sixcolors.com.
That's right.
Anything you want to plug?
Yeah, check out Six Colors. That's the best place to go. I'm working on my iPhone reviews. You know, when you're in the second wave, you got to try to like think deep thoughts because everybody's already read the reviews, so it's not really what it's about anymore. So I'm working on that and taking my kid to college. So, you know.
when are you making that road trip?
It's a couple days, yeah. In a couple days now. Wow. So.
And the cat's in the cradle in the silver spoon.
Yeah, I know, right? At least he's got his new iPhone.
Blue and the man.
I gave you an iPhone. Not call home on a new iPhone.
Hey, at least he's not a blue bubble. That's all that matters. And, of course, officehours.global is where you'll find Mr. Alex Lindsay every hour of the day minus this one. Office Hours is an amazing free club, a clubhouse for everything from multimedia to cooking and on and on and on.
We had a great session this morning about Euroracks and modular synths. Mm. And so there was a lot of really in-depth coverage there. And then tomorrow is going to be really worth checking out. We covered IBC, it's the European NAB, and we had two live views. We were doing virtual production. There was 10 people on the ground, I think 20 or 30 people in the cloud, kind of working on things to put it together. And tomorrow the team is coming together, and they're just going to break down, like, how did we actually pull that off, and what was all the hardware? Because what we do in office hours, of course, is when we do the production, it's kind of transparent. So we go, we do something, and then we open it up and explain how it all worked and what we all did. So anyway, that's going to be tomorrow morning. So it should be a lot of fun, and it'll be recorded on YouTube otherwise.
I have to watch Thursday's Holding Viewers' Attention episode clearly. Something to learn there.
But you have a
Office Hours dot Global. You want to hire Alex, 090.090.media. Thank you, Alex. Thank you, Andy. Yep. Thank you, Alex. Thanks also to our Club Twit members who subsidize all of our programming. If you're not yet a member, $7 a month gets you ad-free versions of all of our shows. You wouldn't even be hearing this ad if you were a member. You also get access to the Club Twit Discord, which is a barrel of laughs, a lot of fun. I was playing, Satisfactory in the Let's Play section, streaming that on Twitch for our club members. I guess that was Saturday. And yesterday I did a little more of that. And now I want to do a cool game that Alex Wilhelm taught me about called Farther Farming. I don't know. Anyway, that's part of the fun. We have the book club. We have shows that don't make it to the public eye because they're subsidized by the club. Things like Hands on Mac with Micah Sargent, Hands on Windows with Paul Thurrott, the Untitled Linux Show with Jonathan Bennett, Stacy's Book Club. Stacy's Book Club is coming up October 27th. We're going to do, the book will be The Long Way to a Small Angry Planet. I join in with Aunt Pruitt and Stacy. That's a lot of fun. We're doing a fireside chat this Thursday with Aunt and Club Twit members. It's just a great place to hang. And then there's also the Twit Plus feed, and that's, for instance, where we'll show some more of those photos from the good old days that we did before the show. That doesn't make it into the podcast, but it makes it to the Twit Plus feed. All of that for a mere $7 a month. It's hard to believe. Just go to twit.tv/clubtwit for more. Thank you in advance for your subscription. It really does help us out. And we're coming, I hate to say it, but winter is coming. yay. Have you seen the stock market lately? We ad sales are starting to slip just a little bit. Thank you, Jason. Thank you, Alex. Thank you, Andy. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. We'll see you next time. Now get back to work, because break time is over. Bye-bye.
Is that an iPhone in your hand?
Wait a second. Is that an Apple Watch on your wrist?
And Do I see an iPad sitting there on the table? Oh my goodness! You are the perfect person to be watching iOS Today, the show where Rosemary Orchard and I, Micah Sargent, talk all things iOS, tvOS, watchOS, HomePodOS. It's all the OSs that Apple has on offer, and we show you how to make the most of those gadgets. Just head to twit.tv/iOS to check it out.